Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. I should say welcome back to the second half of the year, our second semester, so to speak. I thought about giving you a test about the first semester, but I thought that wouldn't be fair, a kind of pop quiz, without having a review session first. But I was thinking about the first half of the year. Each semester is about 13 weeks, and of all of the speakers and panelists that we've had and the subjects that we've touched on, I don't know how many you can recall. I was looking back at the list. We ended the year in December talking about mental health services in the county with a really stellar panel. I know I learned a lot. We've talked about the county budget, of course. We've talked about health care. We've talked and health care reform. We've had speakers on a number of green topics, which we are going to continue in a way today. We started out the semester with Dr. Murphy of ESF talking about sustainability. We've talked about the local food system. We talked about creating a green economy. We've had a presentation on the county's green infrastructure program. We've been all over the place with the need for a state constitution. You remember Assemblyman Brodsky was here. And again, an issue that's going to reoccur. We talked about veterans' reentry into the community. And so I think we've all learned a lot, and hopefully you've all been able to take that information and incorporate it into your jobs and into your civic engagement. And I hope you're looking forward to another 13 weeks of civic engagement and education. Note about next week, you saw that there was a change. We'll be talking next week about the Supreme Court and the First Amendment with Professor Tucker Culbertson from the College of Law. Debbie Freund, who is going to talk about controlling health care costs, will be here in March. So we just had to postpone that a bit, but I don't think that topic's going to go away. So next week it'll be the Supreme Court and the First Amendment. First, I'd like to introduce, we have some new members, and I would like to ask them to rise. John Eberle is here. Mary Pat Oliker is here. Let me see, who else do we have here today? We have, remind me, folks, Bob Herz, where are you? Oh, I guess it's a welcome back for some people. And then also a couple of new members, Mary Hyland, who's the new CEO of the Girl Scouts of Central New York, although I don't think she's here with us today, Pam Hyland, and Wendy Carl Isom from Onondaga Community College. So I hope you'll get to know them, and over the course of the next few weeks, I'll be introducing them individually. Hopefully we'll get them up here. So thank you very much, and welcome. Welcome, welcome. Well, right now, to introduce today's topic and panelist, Sam Gordon, who is a member of the OCL Green Study Committee. You know that the Citizens League, of which hopefully you all are a member, is conducting a study this year on what does it mean to be green. And Sam has been a really active member of that committee. Sam is newly appointed energy coordinator for the Central New York Regional Planning and Development Board, and also serves as smart communities coordinator, energy coordinator for NYSERDA. So, thank you, Sam.
I know I'm loud, but I don't know if I'm that loud. Well, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
All right. I want to point out one important fact this morning, and that is the sun is shining in Syracuse, okay? And I don't know, it may have something to do with our speakers this morning, but I'm not sure. So it's my pleasure to introduce our Onondaga County Executive, Joni Mahoney, and Megan Costa from the Syracuse Onondaga County Planning Agency. I'm sure we all know our county executive, but if you don't know much about her, she is a native of Syracuse. She graduated from the School of Management at Syracuse University and the SU College of Law. She's worked as an attorney in private practice and was also a prosecutor for the Onondaga County District Attorney's Office. In 1999, she was elected to an at-large seat on the Syracuse Common Council. And while she was there, she chaired the Education Committee and the Parks, Recreation, and Youth Programs Committee. She's married to Mark Overdyke, who is also a lifelong resident of Onondaga County, and they live in the town of Onondaga with their four school-aged boys. And this is her second year as county executive. Starting her third year, okay. Well, that someone told me that, so. And I want to also say two other things about the county executive. And she, I think, has leapt into her position and really has demonstrated leadership and also demonstrated that she's willing to, get a little dirty in her job, I think. So in this, if you followed the news over the past year, you'll know that she found herself swimming in Onondaga Creek while taking a tour of the creek and learning about the issues associated with that. And she also, more recently, was caught on candid camera at the Carrier Dome enjoying the game with her husband. So we know that she's not afraid to step up in front of the camera and make things happen. Now, her cohort here this morning is Megan Costa. She is currently the administrator for special projects, as I said, at the Syracuse Onondaga County Planning Agency. And she also heads up the Planning Services Division. Megan's been with the Planning Agency for 6 years. And prior to that, she worked with the City of Syracuse Lakefront Development Office, which is where I met her, because we worked together. And she has a master's degree in city and regional planning from Clemson University. This morning, they're going to be speaking with us about the county, Onondaga County's sustainable development plan. Over the past, year or so, they have been talking about the update that's needed for the Onondaga County 2010 Development Guide. As we know, this is 2010, so it's time for an update. And they're really taking, I think, a strong leadership role in positioning Central New York and Onondaga County to be a leader in sustainability. And you've seen some of the initiatives that have been launched over the past year, like the Save the Rain program and other things. And I think as we, with the What Does It Mean to Be Green Study Committee, we have been exploring what does it mean as a community to be green. And one of the things that we have seen over and over again from other communities is it's important to make a connection between land use decisions, transportation decisions, and really the financial considerations that come about when we're making decisions about growth and development. And I think you'll see this morning that the county has been exploring these issues. Megan has an incredible wealth of information about what's been happening and what the impacts are. So with that, I'll turn it over to the county executive, and she can explain more.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Sam. Is this on? Can you all hear me? I'm not sure that my husband's going to like the sentence, including my swim in the creek and kissing him. So if we could separate those a little for him, he'd probably appreciate it. I am just a small part of this. I asked to join Megan, and Don Jordan is here. I don't know where he disappeared to. Don is the director of the Syracuse Onondaga County Planning Agency and Megan's boss. We all work together. I asked to come just to sort of give you a quick historic background, and then we can let the experts fill in the details. The 2010 settlement plan was written in 1998, and it doesn't, as I've discovered, really have any teeth. It's sort of more of a suggestion about the way the community wants to grow, but I learned very quickly when I came into office that exceptions have been pretty common. And Megan can show you specifically, she's got a color-coded map to show you where those exceptions have taken place. But what I was met with when I got here were a couple developments that had already been well down the road before my term started. And I think that coming to the county for approvals to expand the sewer district was almost one of the last things that was done. The ground was cleared, you know, infrastructure has begun to be put in, houses are being built, and then a conversation came to ask whether the county would hook its sewers up. And it's my understanding that that's sort of the way it was, and as you can tell by looking around the county, we haven't done a very good job of controlling sprawl. And we can explain exactly why that's bad. It's everything from aesthetics to climate change to a community like ours where, you know, sprawl's happening all over the country, but when you overlay a zero population growth on top of sprawl, you only compound the problems in terms of what happens economically. And it only makes sense if the same number of people now have to buy and maintain more roads and more sewers, it's going to cost all of us more money. So it goes a long way to answering the question about where some of your sales tax dollars are going. But we learned very quickly that we needed to get the word out to developers that we're not going to do business the way we've done it in the past. We're going to decide as a community how we want to grow. We're going to put that into a new planning document that Megan and Don and SACPA has done a lot of work on, and then I intend to back that document up and not support exceptions to the document anymore. So this is where you all come in, because a big component in this is education. We don't want to put this document together without input from the community. We want to hear from everyone. Megan has given this presentation to the town supervisors, to the editorial board at the newspaper, and we're trying to solicit feedback. You'll hear, too, about a survey that is out that will be used as part of what goes into this. And then one thing I've really learned about TMR is when you leave here with the information that you have and you take it out into the community, it's very helpful to those of us that are trying to educate the community and trying to gain support and understanding for why we're making the decisions we're making and why we think it's in the best interest of the community to do some of the things we do. If we can convince you of that and you can help us get that message out, all the better. So I will turn it over to Megan. She's been absolutely terrific. The first time I saw her presentation was probably 18 months ago at a department head meeting, and the more people that I think she can get the word out to, the better. I'm very happy, very proud to have her as part of my team. So here's Megan Costa.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to pass around a couple of thank yous. Thank you to the county executive for your leadership and being the biggest cheerleader in this effort, really. I also want to thank Sandra for setting this up and inviting us to TMR to spread the word. And thank you to Sam for the great introduction you gave. I'm going to use my notes. My presentation skills aren't the best. So I just wanted to go through.
Keep the mic close to
you. Oh, sure. Yeah. So I'm going to go through a quick PowerPoint just to sort of frame the issues.
Excuse me, what, do you want to put it on this side of her?
Oh, sure.
As long as she's going to be looking that way?
Sure.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. As I said, Onondaga County is in the process of creating a new comprehensive plan for the county, and that's going to focus on creating sustainable development patterns. The plan will guide policy and practice in county government and serve as a decision-making tool for individuals, businesses, and citizens. And the plan is being created because the settlement patterns, the way we build our communities and places, the way we conduct land use planning, is so closely related to a lot of the decisions we make in government every day and so important in achieving our region's goals for equality, efficiency, progress, and prosperity. So the first part of the new plan is really to look at the trends of where we've been, define the issues, and this is what this presentation is really intended to put out there. So here's a quick snapshot from a county planner's perspective on what the current land development patterns and decisions in Onondaga County have looked like over the past decade or so. First and foremost, we've seen a continued increase in the number of new housing units in the suburban and rural towns. The map here shows that major subdivisions are shown with the red dots, and the purple are individual units that have been created. And as you can see, this development is occurring all over the county, not just in certain pockets, but really all over the place. Since 2000, almost 7,000 new residential parcels have been created, including 147 major subdivisions covering 2,600 acres. And that's just the red dots. And we're also averaging about 160 new units each year outside of the sanitary district boundary. And not only are we building more homes and more businesses, but everything is also getting larger. Larger homes, buildings, roads, parking lots have all increased in size, demanding more land area per unit. The average size of homes here is up 40% in the last 20 years, despite decreasing family and household sizes and our aging baby boomer population. The average lot size for the units being built inside the sanitary district is almost an acre, and the number of rural acres consumed per housing unit is almost three times the average for metro areas across the country. We're also seeing new infrastructure to serve these new developments. To our aqua water infrastructure, between 2001 and 2008, we have seen 290 miles of new water mains installed, 1,600 fire hydrants, as Vito can attest to, 13 storage facilities, and 15 pumping facilities. At the same time, the average cost to consumers has increased by 78%, and I think there's another increase on the way. The amount of water being delivered by Aqua has decreased by 11%, and the population being served has remained unchanged. Sewer infrastructure within the county has also seen growth. In 2007 alone, over 57,000 feet of new sewer pipe was installed to serve development. And since the last county comprehensive plan adopted in 1998, we've added 12,000 acres to the county's sanitary district. There have been no major commercial or industrial projects built and no multifamily units built in these expanded service areas. And we're also faced with a massive network of aging water and sewer pipes, strict new federal and state permitting requirements, capacity and overflow issues in certain locations, and a challenge in serving rural villages and hamlets. We've also expanded our road system, adding 61 miles of new roads since 2000, all local roads, mostly all small residential streets. The amount of driving we all do is also increasing. Our collective daily vehicle miles traveled, or VMT, has been increasing steadily each year, up 43% since 1990. And our average commute times, while better than other regions across the country, are also increasing steadily. Long commutes play a role in climate change, traffic congestion, cost of living, and quality of life issues. The cumulative effect of these changes in our county is the expansion of our urbanized area. Or areas that have been converted from rural to more urban uses. The urban land in Onondaga County has increased 92% since 1970. The urbanized area increased by 50 square miles in the 1990s alone. We're seeing the gradual suburbanization of towns in Onondaga County. First, we saw those close to the city develop with Geddes, Salina, and DeWitt. Then, with new highway infrastructure that was built, we've seen towns such as Manlius, Cicero, Clay, Camillus, and Van Buren experiencing significant growth. And with the new water service and infrastructure that we've seen extended to the towns of Elbridge, Marcellus, and Spafford in recent years, we are seeing development pressures rising in those towns as well. But the reality that must be considered with all of this perceived growth and activity is that it is accompanied by no real regional population growth. As a whole, the total Onondaga County population has not seen measurable growth since 1970. In the last 40 years, we've actually had a net loss of 15,000 people. But the dynamics of change within the county are much more dramatic. There's been a major loss of population in the city, losing between 1 and 2,000 residents every year for the last 40 years. And if you look at the table and the numbers in blue, you can see where many of them have gone. Town population has gone up 43,000. Since 1980. And for every new resident, there's a corresponding increase in both households and housing units. There have actually been more housing units built in the towns than new residents added. The growth we've seen in the suburbs has been supported almost entirely by the major flight of city residents. And these trends are starting to be seen in our older urban villages as well. And the demographic profile of the population that's been leaving the city for the suburbs has left our region with significant educational, racial, and wealth imbalances. These trends and shifts in our development patterns present some really significant challenges to our region. The challenges include a reduction in farmland. The local farm economy is an important economic engine in our county, as well as a real source of pride for our residences. Our forest land and open spaces can be a significant factor in mitigating greenhouse gas production, but we have seen declines in the number of acres and farms, the number of farms, and the number of farm owners. We've lost permanently over 30,000 acres of prime farmland since 1980, and once those prime soils for farming have been converted, it's very difficult for them to return, if at all. We're having a difficulty in supporting transit service. We've seen Centro struggle to cost-effectively meet the needs of both its urban and suburban customer base. Trying to serve low-density communities and job sites and create a large customer base to justify new routes or sustain current routes. Mass transit requires mass, and we're not building mass. And we're unlikely to see improvements to our system or be able to support anything beyond a Centro bus or more innovative until we build our communities with a certain amount of density. It's often said that no matter how many light bulbs we change or how many alternative fuel vehicle cars we put on the roads, we cannot significantly affect climate change until we change our land use development patterns. We can make a building as efficient as we need it to be, but if you still have to drive 20 miles to get there, you're sort of missing the larger point. Private vehicles make up over half of our household emissions. And in large part, due to the decisions on where we live and how we live, it's been shown that we have a much larger per capita carbon footprint here than in several metropolitan areas. With the spread of population, especially families, comes a challenge in the demand for public services in new locations. New and expanded schools, school buses, recreational facilities, fire and police protection, libraries, intersection improvements, street lights, snow plowing, the list goes on. At the same time, we still have those that currently exist, so we're seeing empty houses, abandoned commercial centers, underutilized infrastructure, and the closing of public facilities in our urban areas. With no real population growth, every new housing unit in the towns or new store in the suburbs is roughly equal to a new vacant home or building somewhere else in our metropolitan area. And as I mentioned already, we're seeing concentrations of poverty in our older urban areas. While there's many factors that go into the discussions on poverty, we cannot forget that our local decision-making and development patterns have had a significant impact on some of our social and cultural inequalities. While the most dramatic act may have been the former mortgage redlining in the city neighborhoods, other local conditions and decisions continue to influence housing opportunity, including large lot and exclusionary zoning, federal housing and highway transit, or highway program funding policies, lending practices, and access to transit. Over half of the city's housing stock is currently renter-occupied, while less than 10% of what is being built outside the city is intended as rental or affordable housing. And this concentration of poverty has had impacts on the perceived quality of older school districts, which affects housing choice for many. And these social inequalities and concentrations of poverty have real impacts on our regional economic competitiveness. Quality of place and an educated workforce are the most critical characteristics of places in the United States that are competing well in today's knowledge-based economy. Our workforce is aging, and we're not gaining a significant amount of new workers from the outside at the present time. So the success of our existing human capital is that much more important to our economic well-being. And in order to bring in new workers in business and industry, we've been told repeatedly that we need to offer quality of place with a vibrant city core, attractive neighborhoods, and access to nature. Place matters. And a particular challenge to our local governments, including Onondaga County government, is the spread of our tax dollars over a larger urbanized area. Thousands of new houses and hydrants, hundreds of miles of new water and sewer lines, dozens of miles of new residential streets, on top of what we already have with no new collective wealth to pay for it. We have found that developments that exclusively focus on residential growth in suburban locations rarely offsets the local service demands that new development creates. And infrastructure and other public services serving lower density developments and communities drives higher unit costs. Yet the way we distribute our resources and control land uses here creates competition for new business and new residents between municipalities without the effective assessment of the net benefit or effect on the region as a whole. We're experiencing sprawl without growth, very simply said, which is very expensive and very unsustainable, neither environmentally unsustainable, economically sustainable, or socially sustainable. But along with those challenges, we're also seeing some exciting new opportunities as well. We're seeing changing attitudes and practices all around us as citizens, businesses, and government, as people really start to rethink that the way we are living and how each of us contributes to a sustainable future. We are seeing an increased understanding and widespread acceptance on the topic of climate change and calls for actions from grassroots citizen campaigns all the way up to federal policy. With rising gas and energy prices and a reliance on foreign oil, we're seeing new pressures that are really forcing us to look at alternatives to sustain our way of life or make systematic changes in the way we're actually living. We're looking into alternative fuels and energy sources, taking the bus, or even driving less. We're seeing an obesity epidemic in our county. 59.5% of adults in Onondaga County are considered overweight or obese. And we're seeing study after study linking walkable neighborhoods to more healthy living choices and less sedentary lifestyles than those in auto-dependent neighborhoods. We're seeing real progress nationally and locally towards protection and revitalization of our waterways and open space resources, including through new techniques such as green infrastructure. We're seeing community discussions on the importance of regional thinking, intermunicipal planning, and about government modernization techniques to achieve increased efficiency in government spending and to reduce that competition amongst municipalities. And we're seeing smart growth principles taking hold and being reinforced in different ways as the federal government pursues urban policy initiatives and creates critical relationships between HUD, Federal Department of Transportation, and the EPA. A smart growth cabinet at the state level and pending smart growth legislation, and we're aligning our actions at the county level to be strong and active advocates for smart growth. So these are the main trends, the issues, the opportunities that we've identified to date in putting together a new plan for our county. We do have several more steps to go, and I wanted to quickly go through that process and the upcoming things that we'll be doing to create this county plan. The first effort, which is basically the slides that we've been going through and the discussions that we've been having in the community, is focused on understanding where we stand today and what those direct and indirect relationships are between land development patterns and our environmental, social, and economic sustainability as a region. The rest of the steps are really geared towards where we want to go and how we're going to get there. This part's a little bit more complex. We'll be creating a new shared community vision of how we want to grow and change as a region, and we're going to do this in a few different ways. First, as County Executive Joni, as she mentioned, we're about to release a community survey in the next week or so, and I'll talk about this a little bit more in a minute. The intention is to gauge the things that people value in their communities and test acceptance of some of the ideas that we've come up with to improve the way we might do things differently in our communities. Being a joint effort with the Syracuse Metropolitan Transportation Council, or Transportation Planning Partners, we will also be focusing very specifically on people's values and opinions on transportation issues locally as well. From that, we're going to create two or more future year land use maps, one that shows the continuing the current pattern of growth using the rules and incentives that we have out there today, and another that tweaks those rules and incentives to create an alternative land use vision that reflects some of our goals and the best practices in land use planning that we have seen and best practices in sustainable development, which we feel is very important. So using GIS and modeling software, we're then going to compare the two scenarios using a variety of quantitative and qualitative measures. We're going to look at how they stack up to our identified values, how they impact the environment, how they impact government operations, and how they impact your wallet. Then we'll share these results with the public, and hopefully one of the visions will rise to the top as the preferred future for our county. We also believe that this part of the project will help equip us with some of the educational tools that we really need to bring planning and land use decisions home to people and how they live. By clearly illustrating the different outcomes and the costs of the different choices we make as home buyers, as business, and as governments. Defining sustainable actions. This portion of the plan will identify the necessary actions in order to achieve that vision that we ultimately decide on. It will clearly define in detail the necessary components of a sustainable region, and that will be used to guide decision making. It will present specific policy objectives and projects for county operations, as well as opportunities and possibilities for municipalities, businesses, and individuals. And while the formal plan document will be complete at this point, ongoing coordination, communication, and innovation will be the real key to the region's future. In order for us to effect real change, we must marry policy and practice with the needs that reflect what citizens really want. We intend for this plan to be used as a tool for educating citizens and community leaders on techniques to improve our development patterns and achieve both local and regional and personal goals. So that is where we stand today with our county plan. We welcome your comments and suggestions. We encourage you to fill out the online survey. Watch our website for updates and the scenario modeling project, and watch our website for future public meeting postings. Hopefully by Tuesday or Wednesday of next week, we will have that survey available on our website, and we encourage all of you to fill it out. If you don't have access to the internet, please let me know, and I'll get a copy to you. We're very curious to hear your comments, reactions, and suggestions.
That was very good. That's a lot of information. I just wanted to add a couple quick things to that. One is, you wonder who might be against this, you know, when you put all of this together. And you would think that builders, developers, but that's where county policy comes into place. And if we can create the incentives for the development to happen back inside our inner core, then I'm sure that the opposition will come right along with us. We're not in a position in the county. We have home rule, and we're not in a position to dictate what happens in the towns. And we're not looking to dictate what happens in the towns. But we can say what we're going to do with county infrastructure, whether we are willing to take our sewer lines further, and with the same number of people paying for that additional line, the decisions that we make at the county level will affect you in your wallet, because all of us are going to have to pay those incremental costs. And as those costs continue to rise, we pass those costs on to our businesses, we make for a much less friendly business climate, and we're not going to generate the jobs that we need to get the population growth. So there's a lot of moving pieces, but I think that at the county level, and certainly at the regional level, we can put policies in place that can affect this. And just to muddy the water a little bit more, the sales tax negotiation that's coming up this year, which is entirely under the purview of the county legislature. Linda Irvin's here. I'm going to pass the buck right over there. But that will affect this as well. The last two years, we have seen the precipitous decline in sales tax revenue, and the policy that's been in place has required the county, as I said when I was here before, to artificially make whole the villages and towns. The agreement says that their sales tax revenue won't decline, so the county has had to artificially prop that up. And I think that's a bad policy, because we're feeling very much on the county level the need to trim our costs and to look for ways to be more modern and efficient. And I said the days of doing more with less are over. We're going to start doing less with less. But if you don't feel that at every level, if the villages and the towns are artificially propped up and there's not that real need, I just think it's a bad policy. So when I've met with town supervisors, one of the things that's very clear immediately, and the supervisor Ken Bush out in Elbridge made the point that the only way right now, with the current policies that are in place, the only way to really generate new revenue for the Jordan-Elbridge School District is for more people to move into Elbridge and to clear the land and build these expensive houses and get people out there. But then they're competing with Salina or Tully. We have to do away with the artificial competition within our community. And this document is going to help us say, this is what we want our whole county to look like. And if we value that rural space, then we're going to have to find a way to compensate the communities that agree to stay rural. And that's going to have to be a cost borne by those of us that live in a more dense community. So there are certainly things that we can do. There's a lot of this that goes together, but I just didn't want to let you leave without one plug for paying attention to the sales tax negotiation. Oh, and you have questions, I hope.
I also want to mention that there is a version of this PowerPoint on the Onondaga Citizens League website, and that hopefully we will put this one up on our Thursday Morning Roundtable website also. And I saw a hand up right here.
Well, I'm a little troubled by the absence of more comment about the city, because the city is the one is where the population is being bled from. And at the same time, there's an expansion of all kinds of tax-free institutions from the university, the government, and the churches, so that there's almost, you know, one wonders if there's any tax base left in the city at all. So that's only going to accelerate the whatever's left of the middle class in the city leaving. And it just really shows us how arbitrary those jurisdictional distinctions are. And I realize that the city has its own government, but I'd like a word or two at least about how you're coordinating some of this, or if you're coordinating some of this with some planning in the city.
I'll let Megan answer the planning part of it, but I can tell you that Mayor Miner and I have already had conversations. The whole goal, Lois, is to make sure that those things don't happen, that we don't just continue to let things go the way they've gone, the tax base in the city goes away. It affects all of us if we don't have a strong urban core. I know myself personally from bringing people who, there was a green manufacturer who came looking to perhaps set up an operation here in central New York, and they want to drive down Salina Street, and they want to know what our community is like. And, you know, the plant might be in Clay or Cicero, but the reverse isn't true. If people are looking to locate in the city, they're not taking a drive through Cicero to make sure that, that you know, it's thriving. But I can tell you that I was on the city council in the year 2000 when the last sales tax negotiation took place. And now I'm here, and I haven't completely lost everything that I thought back then, I promise. And one of the things that always, I never thought that people gave enough, put enough stock in, and I intend to make sure that people are aware of it, is I've asked, I think Beth is here, Beth Ruggie, I don't know if it was Beth, but someone at Syracuse University, we asked for the zip codes of the employees. And we've asked for the zip codes of the employees at Upstate and at Onondaga County Government. We employ 4,000 people at Cross Serving Hospital, because I want to show people that those institutions that are property tax free and supported, the city has to support the infrastructure for those facilities, are the jobs for the rest of us here in Onondaga County. And during that sales tax negotiation, I want people to understand, I see Lance nodding his head, I'm sure he'll get the word out, but other communities affect that with a commuter tax. And if we don't want an additional tax here, and we don't want a commuter tax in Onondaga County, we have to recognize that the city is supporting a lot of suburbanites that come in every day to go to work, and especially when they're supporting them at tax-free institutions. It really has to play a role in that sales tax negotiation.
You talked to the county has the sewer, but some other entity has the water supply. And how does the independent water supply affect the growth, and how is that going to be managed?
The independent water supply and extending infrastructure out to the more rural communities obviously puts an additional pressure on those property owners to think about developing their properties. So it creates the development pressure. And sort of that builds that nexus of things that needs to happen in order for someone to really consider transforming their property from one thing to another. Bottom line.
Well, those are probably questions for them. But, you know, there's also instances, I think, where it's not that simple. We need to put these policies in place with our sewers. And as Megan said, bringing the water adds the additional pressure. But there are times that there are people who live in our rural communities that need clean water. So it's not a slam dunk, no extending water lines discussion. It has to be that we make those decisions where appropriate, but that doesn't start a domino effect of development in those communities.
A water quality issue in a rural community, that the pipe should be sized appropriately to serve that water quality issue and not be sized to support development from here to there and everywhere in between. And I think that's the problem that we've run into, is the incentive for development that's been created in solving some of the quality issues that we've had.
I've only lived in this city for 6 years, but in that time I have known many people who have moved out of the city for one reason, because of the schools in the city they wanted to move out for their children. If we had the quality of schools in the city that we do in some of the suburbs, they would have stayed. When you drive in through Genesee Street from the east, you see some very nice improvement, but you have no reason to go off of Genesee Street and see some of these fine homes that people still live in and buy into. But if they have children, they don't want to stay.
I want to just also mention that on March 4th, I think it is, the first Thursday in March, we'll have members of the Syracuse City School Board here. So we'll be dealing with some...
Calvin's here today. Well, I agree with you, but that is that problem is twofold. One, it's because of years of this kind of thing happening and wealth leaving, but it's also because the state formula for funding schools is not fair, and it's not fair to urban districts, and there are lawsuits, I think, trying to bear that out right now.
The city of Syracuse has a planning department as well, and they're deeply involved in sustainability. How does the county and the city plan to collaborate with each other on this common issue between both entities?
Yeah, we've sat down with Andy Maxwell, who's the new director of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability for the City of Syracuse, and they are looking for opportunities to advocate this plan. They have a very vested interest in this plan. Success with this plan and curbing the issues of sprawl and the distribution of wealth and is a real issue, and I think the city can and should be one of our biggest advocates in this plan, and we're looking for ways to make that relationship a little bit more formal and strong. But in the first couple months of the new administration, we're really looking at those opportunities.
And I think Andy would have been here this morning, except that I heard that he has a meeting having to do with the topic of planning and sustainability, so he couldn't make it.
Joni, you talked about sales tax as an opportunity to relook at county-town relationship. State budget is coming down with all sorts of cuts, probably will for the next couple of years, and it seems to me the same sort of rubric, the same sort of having to reevaluate how towns operate, how the county operates. Do you see any areas out of the state budget where you might start working on that sort of thing?
To be honest with you, until the state legislature is done with the budget, and I know Assemblywoman Christensen is here, we're monitoring it, but we can't plan at this point for what the state budget is. But within the towns and the county and the villages and the city, I have ongoing conversations. I had two town supervisors yesterday in my office from the towns of Fabius and Cicero, and I have said that the topic of consolidation isn't what can the county take from the smaller municipalities, but if you're doing something in the same place that we're doing something, which one of us should be doing it? Not necessarily the county. In Monroe County, where Rochester is, has completely gotten out of the Department of Transportation business. They don't have a Department of Transportation at the county level. Instead, they contract with the towns to maintain the county roads that are within the individual towns. So all the consolidation doesn't have to go in one direction. And there are plenty of smaller opportunities. One issue that came up yesterday, and she would be a wonderful guest for you here, the Supervisor Velarde, is that we talk about people wanting to live in villages and wanting their village government to exist because of the level of service. But in this age of technology, that's sort of not even the case anymore, because people have become accustomed to getting things immediately. And when you have very rural villages, they cannot afford a full-time 5-day-a-week, 40-hour-a-week person in their tax collection office. So you'll call on Wednesday and get a recording that the office is open on Tuesday, and you have to wait a week. And so the level of service, that balance is kind of tipping because, you know, you can get someone on the phone at the county and handle things immediately. So we're looking for the opportunities to come together and spend less I tell everybody, let's look at these as joint balance sheets, whether you're paying federal taxes or state taxes or county taxes or town taxes or school taxes or fire district taxes, they're all coming out of your wallet. And we should all be considering that in the decisions that we're making, not how can I take less from you and make him pay more, but let's look at this as a joint balance sheet of yours. And you have my word, we're working on it.
I'm wondering if there is another city of equivalent size that you take as a model for what Syracuse could be.
We've been reading everything and anything and everything we've been getting our hands on. A particular model that we've looked at for particularly the scenario modeling is, I think it's the Grand Rapids, Michigan metro area. They had a 5-county region that they did this for. The Chicago area also did this land scenario modeling exercise. And it's so easy to understand, and it puts it out there so very simply for people to understand the real costs of the choices that they're making. And we really look to those models very specifically. But we're taking things from all over the place and trying to frame the discussion.
I can't find any fault with anything you've said, really. But I am concerned. I happen to live in Manlius, where there's big houses going up and consistently. However, I have friends who are decorators, own two different companies, had no business last summer, zero, because the construction was down. All the construction people were without a business. And even more concerned I am are for the young people who are getting out of school in May with graduate degrees in teaching, in counseling. Wenzel Road is closing. Their friends don't have jobs. The only place these kids can find jobs is by moving south. It's a huge concern, and I think we're making it even bigger. You say that we have an aging workforce, but the aging workforce isn't retiring.
But you're illustrating why this has been a problem and how we've gotten to where we are and what the effects are. We're not going to be able to, well, first of all, the economy is is the cause of the construction being down. And it is a problem, but we need the incentives in place for that construction when it kicks back up to be more toward our inner core and redeveloping some of the thousands of vacant properties that are in the city of Syracuse. And those policies have to be put in place so that there's a reason. They're not just going to do it out of the goodness of their heart. There has to be a reason. But until we recognize the need to do that and start doing that and start reducing the overall size and cost for each of us individually, we can't attract jobs here. And we can't, when the jobs come, the people come, the need for the schools comes, the need for the teachers and the counselors come. So we have together, we have to put this planning document in place, stick to it, and start turning that tide so that we can become a more competitive, smart a community that has grown wisely. But you're just illustrating what the effect is of a lot of bad choices.
But I want to first of all congratulate you for coming out of the starting gate as the new county executive and doing something about the Armory Square. That was such a fast start. It was great. But in the city, I have seen us lose 100,000 people since we have been in Syracuse. The infrastructure of both the water and the sewer is basically 100 years old. And with that loss of 100,000 people, taxpayers, what we are seeing is naturally that nothing has been done in that particular area. How can we spread the cost of repairing the infrastructure for the city of Syracuse, for the heart of the city, among more taxpayers? countywide?
The way you do it is you get more people into the center of the city. If some of the new construction and new housing units are built in the city and you can bring some of the taxpayer wealth back into the city, you have more people paying into that pot to pay for it. I think the answer you would like is that we'll spread the cost of repairing the sewers in the city countywide, but you want a one-term county executive. There's a solution. I don't think that's going to happen.
Two quick questions. First, is there a timeline for completion of the program, of the study?
We're hoping to conduct the scenario modeling exercise over the next 6 months or so, and then get into part three of the plan and really put it all together in a package that's easily digestible by citizens and government over the next 3 to 6 months after that. Our aggressive goal is the end of the year.
Secondly, in the presentation, you talk about regional planning. Are you coordinating with neighboring counties?
Not quite yet. It's not a bad idea. I think we've got enough on our plates as the county, and really focusing on the city as the core of the region, the economic hub of the Central New York region, most specifically, and then the urban development boundary directly around that. So we've really been focusing on the city as the core, that urban development that has occurred directly around that, and then that transition into the rural area, which is really the rest of the Central New York region for a large part of it. So we've separated it not necessarily into specific counties, but that urban, suburban, and rural form.
But I can assure you that we're working regionally on other topics like economic development. Onondaga County, instead of, I think for the first time ever, instead of just focusing on Onondaga County, we, in our budget last year, contributed to the MDA's attraction effort for a much broader regional and perspective, and there are other ways that we're working with other counties, but Onondaga County is never going to be able to compete if we just look inside the borders. But from a planning perspective, we're focusing on the county.
Since you mentioned economic development, with the merger of the Greater Syracuse Chamber of Commerce and the MDA, do you see that as changing the way that that the county does business in economic development? I mean, will it affect what the county office does?
Well, the county office is in the process. I think if you paid attention to the mayor's State of the City, the mayor was out on the campaign trail saying that if she was elected, one of the things she wanted to do was combine economic development effort between the city and the county. And so we were lying in wait for her. And as soon as she took office, we put a memorandum of understanding on her desk that's going to, right at the very beginning, co-locate our offices. And it's not just city and county, but we are going to have representatives, I think, from the federal government, the state government, this combined chamber MDA organization, and we're going to have a storefront location in a thriving area so that we can all be available in one place and do a better job of economic development. Somewhere down the road, it would be nice to have one entity, but that takes charter changes on the city's level and the county's level. But at the very least, we are, Ben Walsh in the city and Mary Beth Primo in the county are going to be in the same physical location in, I would say, the next 6 months.
Great. And we'll be talking to the mayor in mid-April, and so we'll get an update from her then, I'm sure.
Yes, every year we have an event called the Parade of Homes. It's usually out in what used to be farmland just a few years before. And every year the politicians come out and praise it as a sign of the development and economic prosperity of the region. Should we keep doing that?
If it's inside the sewer district.
Yeah, I mean,
inside the city.
Yeah, we've talked to the home builders about trying to get one in the city of Syracuse or in a hamlet-type development scenario. We've been in conversation with them. We've talked to the home builders, and We've actually asked them outright, is there enough room inside of the county sanitary district to do what you want to do? And they laughed. They said, absolutely. So the intention is there to try and gear the Parade of Homes in a new direction to reflect smart growth and hopefully serve as a model and show people what the alternatives are and what we could do differently. So we're hoping, we're trying.
And I want to remind you that we also have an annual Downtown Living Tour. Marika, do we have a date? May 22nd, Downtown Living Tour. Thank you very much. Thank you, County Executive Joni Mahoney. Thank you, Megan Costa. And thank you all.